Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Wheel Suckers podcast, brought to you by Look Mom No Hands and the London Bike Kitchen. Please enjoy this recording of our live panel, the Wyman Review, with British cyclocross champion Helen Wyman, with Andrew Nippard, Hugh Williams, hosted by Laura Scott.
Hi, thank you everyone for coming out tonight. As you know, we are here with Helen, who's going to be talking to us a little bit about the last year of what's been happening with her career and different events. But I'm just going to pass the microphone around to introduce everybody who's on stage. So we'll start with you.
My name is Hugh Williams. I'm a level 3 coach for road and time trial and cyclocross. And I guess I'm here because I've found myself in the enviable position of being the organiser of the next year's National Cyclocross Championships. Thank you. You didn't say that on the day of the last one. I guess that started because for the last couple of years I've been based at Cycle Park as a coach, which is in Gravesend in Kent. And thanks to John Mullineaux, who is here somewhere, hiding.
At the bar,
as usual. Thanks to all the hard work John's done in the past for everything cyclocross within London. Cycle Park hosted a couple of years ago the regional championship, which then last year went up a notch up to the national trophy. And British Cycling informed us on the day, or shortly after, that they awarded me the national championships for 2019. And along with Helen, we've got some initiatives here where we think we can kind of involve a lot more women on the day in that race. So planning's already started, well underway, which is why I've got bags under my eyes already. So I'll hand back over to her.
And Andrew, did you shoot?
Yes, I'm Andrew. I'm a sports nutritionist who specialises in endurance and ultra endurance events, and I've been working with Helen for pretty much exactly 12 months. Met her last February. So been working with her this entire season.
Amazing. And I guess we'll just jump straight into questions for Helen, because everyone should know who she is. For those of you who don't know, Helen won her 10th British National Championship this January, which is pretty incredible. So I guess that's probably the best place to start, most recently as well. So if you could just tell us a little bit about what it was like to win for the 10th time, which is a pretty incredible feat.
So I've had a good year. I'm pretty happy with the year I've had. I had 4 goals this year. One of them was to move up in the world ranking, which I was 30th at the beginning of the year, and I wanted to be on the front row for Worlds, and I'm now 5th, so I am. So I achieved that. The second one was to win Koppenberg, I managed that. The third one was to win Nationals, and that was actually a really tough race because me and Nikki, going into it, in my mind, we were 50-50. It was going to be one of us, but both of us had won when we'd competed against each other. Both of us had been together in a lot of races, so it was a tough one to win. And I, because it was 50-50, I went in with no pressure on my head, because if Nikki won, people would expect it, and if I won, people would expect it too. So Yeah, it was good. And finally, for the first year, they had a proper medal that looks good in a trophy cabinet.
The important stuff, obviously. So in terms of your preparation for this race, it would be really interesting to hear a little bit more about like the nutrition and the planning that goes into prepping and sort of being at the top of your game to get to that.
Yeah, so if anybody here races nationals, you drink a lot of beer beforehand. If you're an elite woman, all the beer. And no. So yeah, I've been working with Andrew for the last year, and we've looked at diet and things, and I think it's pretty much, my diet was pretty good to start with. So we haven't really adapted that very much. But the other things he's been helping me with are supplements and things like that. And when you live in Belgium, you don't actually see daylight for most of November, December and January. So things like vitamin D and probiotics and stuff like that. But actually, this is the first year in about 5 or 6 where I haven't got sick. And that's due to my diet and the nutritional advice Andrew's given. So, but before a race, there's other things like beet shots and caffeine and cherry shots. And yeah, sometimes you rattle from some of the things you should taking, but it's all things that are natural and that are healthy for you to not get sick, basically. So apart from caffeine. So over to Andrew. Tell us about caffeine.
Caffeine is one of the only, for endurance sports, it's pretty much one of the only proven supplements over on top of real foods that for 95% of people will actually have a performance enhancing effect if A, you time it correctly, and B, you have it in enough volume, and C, you don't have too much of it, because it operates in a bell curve shape. So if you don't have enough, not much of an effect. Right amount, peak in the middle, too much will actually have a detrimental effect for your performance. And a lot of people think, take caffeine, enhance performance. It's kind of not as simple as that, because you've got to time it. It takes an hour to get into your system. So if you take it 20 minutes before, it's going to kick in after you finish racing. So it's kind of, it's the little things. It's not just drinking 3 or 4 coffees 2 hours before or 20 minutes before. It's, without using a overhyped phrase from a well-known professional team, it's the marginal gains of having it the right time, right amount, personalised for your weight. So someone like Chris Hoy, a lot heavier than Helen, will have a very different volume to what Helen needs. A lot not heavier than Helen.
So I've used caffeine in the past, but I actually did too much, and so I stopped using it. And Andrew, I said, so I was kind of wary this year of trying again. And you get an amazing first lap when you take too much, and then you die. So yeah, I was kind of wary. And this year in Nacht van Woerden, which is a nighttime race, it starts at like 9 o'clock at night or something. And I was busy in a VIP thing before that you have to do. And so I took my caffeine about 15 to 20 minutes before the race. And I won, and it was the first time I'd done it all year. And I said to sent Andrew a message and said, yeah, caffeine was really good, I did it, and it, yeah, I won the race. And he's like, all right, when did you take it? I said, yeah, 20 minutes before. He sent a message back and saying, well, good luck sleeping tonight. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, oh, well, you took it in completely the wrong time. It had nothing to do with the caffeine.
Oh. Which is a tremendous positive, because you won the race. It's a lot better than everyone else with no caffeine in the system.
So I do listen to him since then. So, yeah.
So in terms of, you've sort of stated that this year you had 4 goals that you set out to achieve. What are your goals for next year? Have you, or this coming year, have you started to set them?
I can't possibly tell you. I'd have to kill you. Okay. No, I have goals in my head, but I'm not actually ready to verbalise them yet. After the season, we do a thing called a Butler performance profile. It's very dull, but you go through and you write down things that you think you did good, things you think you did bad, then you rate them, and then Steph does the same, and he is mean. I'm telling you people, mean. And then when I've read them, I then go away for about 2 days because I think he's been really mean. And then we come back and discuss it again and work it out from there. But I do have, there's a few races in Belgium that I've never won that do suit my racing style, and they'll go on the list. And I do think I could get a medal at the World Championships.
Amazing. So just a little ambition.
Small goals, yeah.
So obviously one of the things, beyond just being an incredible cyclist, you're very involved in the sport and helping to promote the sport. And you've done, is it 4 years on the UCI as well to help the growth of cyclocross? Could you tell us a little bit about your involvement there?
Yeah, so in governing the sport, each discipline has a commission. And on that commission, you discuss things that you think will improve the sport. And then you make rules, and then those rules go to another commission, and then they get said they'll get done or not. And so I was on the cyclocross commission and for 4 years, and it was good, and it was political, and sometimes it was hard, but we managed to get equal prize money in C1, C2 races, so everything's equal apart from the World Cup. We managed to get more time, we managed to get the races in the right order. We now have 35 races live on television because of the rule changes. We've got an under-23 World Championships, a future Junior World Championships. So I think I did all right in 4 years, but I think there's still a long way to go. And yeah, good luck to the next person.
And obviously you've just launched Helen 100 as well. So for those who don't know about it, do you give us a little...
So yeah, so when we were at Nationals this year, we felt that there wasn't that many riders in the elite race, the elite women's race. There was only maybe 30 or 35 riders. And you look at the under-23s and there's 40 or 45, which still actually isn't that much compared to the under-23 and junior boys, because the under-23 women's includes junior women. And so me and Steph talked about it. We spent a lot of time in cars, and so we had like an 8-hour drive home, and we were talking about it, and we kind of said, well, how do we change this? How do we make this better? And so the first thing that came to our head was to pay for the entries for everyone under 23 at the National Championships next year, which is where Hugh comes in. So we spoke to Hugh, and Hugh said, yeah, I don't see why you can't have 100 riders. I don't see why it can't be paid for. So that's what we did, a crowdfund. And the crowdfund reached its goal within about 3 weeks, which is fantastic. And so yesterday we relaunched it to go for another week, and any extra money over that goal is going to go towards having cross clinics in the UK for under 23 girls, because it's okay to say we'll pay for your entry, but it's also really important to get those riders engaged. And hopefully by me coming to the UK to do some work with them and connecting with the local leagues to find out who these riders are, hopefully we can get them to come to the clinics and actually come to Nationals. And I chose the age group because if you can engage young riders now, I mean, I'm not young, you look young. Hopefully these riders can actually, by having contact with me, know that I am approachable, I'm there if they want to send me a message or something, and actually engage them to carry on in the sport. And 16 to 20 is the age group where most young women leave the sport because of social pressures and other things. And I can't imagine what it must be like growing up with Instagram and Twitter now, when, you know, we didn't have the internet when I was a kid, and so you can't be judged 24 hours a day when I was a kid, but now you can. And for us to be able to say, look, you know, look what I'm doing, this is cool, there's more than just what you might see in your local peer group and things at school. So yeah, basically we want 100 women at under 23 Nationals, and we want to try and engage those women to stay in the sport so that in 5 years' time there'll be 100 women in elite Nationals.
I think that was the key thing we picked up on when we were in Hetton, was the wide open spaces that you were getting in the elite women's race, which kind of translates through to when you see, for example, a London League race in this area, where we regularly get some 40 or 50 women. I think, John, you'd agree with that. If we do a Herne Hill race across the senior, junior categories. And if you consider that in relation to all the other leagues which are going on at the same time, there's way over 100 women racing in any league weekend, and we couldn't just figure out why they were not at Nationals. And it's even worse at the regional championships, where down here we have a combined regional championships with the idea that more people will come and race in the women's categories. and there are so few, so it's almost like the perception is there that the national trophy, the regional champs, national champs, the standards got that much higher that maybe so many women don't race. And that's crazy because it's exactly the same thing. You know, the whole point of cyclocross is that it's so inclusive. It's so much fun, so accessible, so easy. And there's so many categories racing on the course at the same time at the regional league level that everybody's having fun because they're racing somebody. So by engaging the under 23 women, hopefully, as Helen says, we're going to get this trickle up effect where in a couple of years' time, that senior category at both regional and national level will be absolutely full, because there's so many women riders out there that we're just going to hope they're all going to come out the same day.
Do you think there's a reason why it's been such a struggle so far to get women or more women out?
This is the paradox, because it's not a struggle to get women doing cyclocross. If you look at the social media tweets and the number of riders you get at the quality regional events these days, the league events, they are there for some reason. They're just perceived that the standard maybe is a lot higher when you get to regional and national championships, and maybe that's off-putting. And when we've got about, looking around the room here, there's four likely candidates down there who race every week. There's one of the juniors or top junior riders down here. And in the lower age category, certainly, they tend to be really, really busy in the regional leagues. And the veteran women as well tends to get an awful lot of high numbers. There is somehow a gap in the middle, and I guess that's what the Helen 100 is trying to fill.
I think it can be intimidating. I think it can be really intimidating racing against riders that have podiumed at World Cups, that have won European Championships. You know, it's not easy to line up against those riders, and if you have to travel a long way and you think you're going to get lapped out because of the 80%, then yeah, that's not a great situation either. And I think also part of the thing being under 23 is that riders shouldn't get 80% because it's junior and under 23. So you are travelling all that way, but you do get to do a full race. And so, yeah, I think it's probably more that self-confidence, thinking that you're not going to get a great result, thinking you don't want to go to be 80%, thinking you're not believing that your ability is as good as it is. And I, last year we did a load of cross clinics, and some of the women on that are racing regionally and winning regionally. And I said to one of them, like, why didn't you come along? She's 26 years old. So why didn't you come along? And she said, oh, well, you know, it's quite a long way and I wasn't going to do great. And it's like, well, there was a girl there that races against her that she beats every single week, and she got 10th. So, but these women need engaging people, need engaging with, and need to be told, yeah, do it. You know, what have you got to lose?
I think as well as organisers, we need to be constantly thinking about the way the structure of these races work, in terms of, you know, categories getting their own course time, because some categories they're so oversubscribed, you get literally hundreds of riders on the course at any one time. And contrast that with what happened at the national championships, where the senior women, as Helen said, there's only about 35 in that race. So while on paper we absolutely want juniors under 23s to have their own category, their own course time, you know, there were a lot of people up there looking at that race and looking at it on TV saying, well, why is the court so empty for this race, whereas other categories were absolutely rammed. So it's a constant battle for people like John, who's run a London League for all these years, to find the right amount of course time for the number of categories racing. As I say, as organisers, we need to be very, very mindful of how we can go about utilising that time to its best possible advantage.
So thinking about juniors, who are you excited about at the moment? This young lady just here? Sorry. I think Harriet Harmden did amazing in the World Championships this year. She was fourth in the under 23 category, and she's 16 years old. She's a very talented rider. Ben Tullett in the junior boys, he won that. That was an incredible ride by him. I think the best juniors have probably still not yet been discovered. And I think there's a lot of talent in Britain, and more riders that see riders like Evie Richards winning the world championships means more young riders think, actually, I can do that, and maybe there'll be more women in cross naturally because of that.
Do you think that, I mean, somebody I was talking to in the crowd earlier before the event started, and somebody was like, well, cross is just so niche. Do you think that's something that's changing, that opinion's starting to change recently? Or?
Cyclocross is very niche outside of Belgium. And you couldn't really say it's niche in Belgium. We have 20,000 spectators. We have an average viewing figures of around 60% of the market share. That's technically more percent than people that watch EastEnders in England. So, you know, it's pretty big. I can't go to a cafe in normal clothes and not get recognised, which is pretty cool. And so outside of Belgium, yeah, it is more of a niche sport because it's not so well publicised. But, yeah, I don't... I mean, my job is Belgium, basically. My job is racing abroad, and it's such a huge thing there, it doesn't ever feel niche to me.
And do you think, you said, you know, publicising it and getting the TV time, do you think that's something... I mean, obviously, it's starting to get better and women's cycling is starting to be shown a bit more, but do you think that's something that just needs to be pushed for?
Yeah, I mean, cyclocross, we had 35 races live on Belgian television this year, which is incredible. That's 34 and a half more hours than road racing gets in a year. So, you know, we're already there. That's the same as what the men get. We had the national championships were on the BBC on live on the internet. And I think that in order to get it across to other countries is really hard. I think how do you introduce a sport that nobody's heard of when nobody's prepared to show it? So I think you have to grow the internet side. You have to show that there's an interest in the sport, and then from there you can grow it further. But I mean, with the internet, people watch live streams they shouldn't watch, but you know, it works. And so, yeah, I think you have to use modern technology to promote the sport.
And Hugh, what do you think about how you've seen the sport grow?
It's just a case of over the last couple of years, it's just the inclusion, you know, it's gone from... My first introduction to cross was probably 20 or 30 years ago, when you used to get the same sort of hot bunch of basically old guys with craggy faces riding around a few parks in London and literally climbing over fences and swimming through lakes with the bikes on their back. Whereas these days it's become a much more inclusive, you know, you get a huge number of much younger riders. With my coach's hat on, we get a huge amount of local kids from the Kent sort of area come into the venue at Cyclo Park. And, you know, 20 or 30 young girls, 40 or 50 young boys, two or three times a week, all doing cyclocross. And, you know, this was unheard of in the past. Definitely, although we're talking about how to increase the number of women in the sport, it has increased as well. I think just the inclusion, the diversity that you're finding now in cyclocross, it's just made the sport much more accessible to a much much wider group of people.
So for anybody who's in the crowd or knows somebody who's interested about it, how would you recommend they go about getting into it if they've not tried it before?
If you've never tried cyclocross?
Yeah.
Crazy. you should go out and try it. It's one of the best cycling disciplines. Primarily because the first time you race, nobody knows if you've been lapped or if you're in third. So there's no shame. You can't lose anything. There's no shame. It's a fantastic sport and it makes you smile. And every time I ride my cross bike, I haven't ridden it for a couple of months, and then I'll go out and ride it. And you feel like you're actually being really naughty because it feels like you're on a road bike, but you're riding off-road and you shouldn't really be doing that. And it's just... And you can go out and get muddy and no one can tell you off and stuff. It's great.
I think a lot of the beauty that people get out of cyclocross as well is that it's kind of done at your own speed and your own technical ability. So a lot of people, novices particularly, get put off by road racing, for example, where it's kind of dictated by a lot of the people around you, like riding in a bunch, or especially on an open road or a circuit. It can be quite unnerving. At cyclocross, you're pretty much racing your own race unless you're kind of up at the front end of it. So it's very much your own thing. It becomes almost like an off-road time trial with skills, which is great. Yeah, it's really empowering for a lot of people who think, you know, they're not going to get dropped from a bunch of riders because there's always people around them. There's nothing worse than being a novice road racer and watching the pack going up the road and you're kind of left on your own. And cyclocross doesn't really involve that. It's much more of a, you know, much more of an inclusive sport, I think, for particularly for beginners.
And if you want to start, you should join up with your cyclocross league, and they'll point you in the right direction. And just even if you don't want to race, just go along and watch a race, and you can. And everybody's really friendly. It's one of the friendliest disciplines for sure.
So I think we're gonna open it up to the crowd now, because I know there was a lot of questions coming through on Twitter and everything earlier, so quite keen to get as many questions from the audience as possible. So does anybody have any questions?
Advice with any supplement over, you know, it's a food first approach, and especially if you're under the age of 18, if you're working with any young people at all, then I would advise any form of supplement at all, and that includes caffeine. You know, once you're in inverted commas kind of good enough, then maybe yes, but they're gonna, you know, progress at their own rate, don't need things over and above real food until you're getting more serious about your racing. And when I say serious, I don't necessarily mean always at Helen's level, but you know, if you're serious about your performance as an adult, then yes, fine, but I wouldn't recommend any form of supplementation for anyone under the age of 18. It's just not the way to go. Just let them kind of develop at their own rate with proper food.
Anyone else?
Yeah, so I've never been asked that question. I think it will never happen. I've spoken when I was on the commission. We talked about it a lot. We spoke with one of the guys that was actually he was president of our commission, but he'd also been on the Winter Olympic Committee decision making board. And he said it had to be practiced on snow and ice for 95% of the time. This year, I've done one race in ice. So, and it wasn't even ice, it was just frozen ground, really. So I think it would be too hard to include it. In terms of if there was an option to include it, yeah, I think it would be fantastic because it would get our sport out to a bigger audience. But, and I would love to go for cyclocross at the Olympics because I would be good enough to get there, but at the same time it would probably change the structure of how it's run. And I, one of the things I love about cross is that the National Federation have allowed me to do my job and take me to world championships and things, but I run parallel to them, not with them. And I think if it became an Olympic discipline, it would have to be very much encased in the federation, which would have changed my career for sure. But in terms of the growth of the sport, yeah, I think it would be fantastic in the Olympics, but I think there's a 99% chance of it not happening. Commission, I tried to get 50-minute races from the very first commission meeting I went to, and I was told there's not enough time in the day, apparently. So I'm now working on a 25-hour day. I did try from the very beginning. At the time, some races were 35, 36 minutes because it was 40 minutes and you just had to get close to that. So the compromise I was given was the ruling says minimum of 40 minutes, But this year we saw Narman World Cup was only 39. So to me, I think it's crazy. Women have better endurance. I think men and women should do 50-minute races. I think that's enough. Men will do more laps, but it's still 50 minutes. And the reason why our racing is so exciting at the minute is because it's a bit shorter than the guys, and you can actually, you don't have to play tactics so much. And so to me, it would be perfect if everybody had 50. They're never going to reduce the men's, but to start with, I think the women should be 50 minutes, and I have campaigned for that. And this year, one World Cup in Zeven was 51 minutes, and the last lap, I actually came second because I was able to catch up and drop third. So to me, I think it's one of the best things that could go forward for the sport, and women do have better endurance. So, but unfortunately, the people that govern the sport don't.
Do you have anything to add on that?
Well done. Well done, you.
Yeah. My daughter's 17. She races cross Central Cycle Cross League.
Why isn't she here?
She couldn't get here. So, I've come instead. I've got to try and get her to give it more. One of the things that she finds a bit of an issue is the racing, we race the juniors, vets, women, with the vet 50 men.
Yeah.
So she's normally racing the men. She feels a little bit intimidated by the fact that there's like loads of men sort of coming past all the time. And I think they would like, and I think a lot of the women in the league would like a separate race. So that, you know, and again, it would feature them more and focus it more on them. I don't know, again, you're just talking about time and whether or not it's something that could happen.
Which league, sorry?
Central.
I'll have a word with them. No, I think I do. If they don't have a women's race, and that can incorporate every woman over 16, then yeah, I think that's the way forward. I think that needs to be pushed for, and because it can be intimidating. I've done vets junior races. I actually won one, which was quite fun. But other times, when I first started, I used to race the London League down at Herne Hill with John, and I was always battling with guys. There was never a battle with a woman, and you're probably not teaching yourself how to beat your competition when you race against the guys, because they are mostly nicer to you, and they don't like fight you for corners as much as you might if you're on a one-on-one battle with a woman. So, I think there should be at least one race that is just for women, and so I'll have a word with them.
Don't mention my name.
No. I won't. You're fine. There was, yes.
So there was some criticism of the World Championship course was only just two unrivaled.
I thought it was amazing. Such a cool race. It was so brutally hard. It was amazing. There were bits that were like, probably they tried to protect the course as much as possible. There was, you couldn't ride the actual race course fully until the day of the race, of the first race. So they did try and protect it, but it was always going to be an epic course, and any weather condition would have made it epic. If it was icy, it would have been crazy. So to have that much mud and stuff was fun. I think that it's one of the toughest courses on the calendar, full stop. And then you put those weather conditions on top, it does make it tough. But it was the same for everyone, and the strongest rider won in every race, and that showed. And the whole season, apart from, Matthew van der Poel didn't win, but Wout van Aert could match him on a day when he was super strong. So Ansana won, and she's won the most races of any woman this year, and Elisabeth won the under-23s, and he's, won the most races of any under-23 man. So I think it was fair winners, and it was a fair course, and there wasn't much tactics involved, which is perfect. Wonderful. No, I do love living in Belgium, to be fair. Like, it is cool to go, to go to the supermarket and someone recognises you and says, "Oh, I saw you the weekend, and you did really good," or just normal people on the street that you I wouldn't imagine should recognise your normal clothes. And that's really cool. And that's the whole cultural thing. Everybody appreciates what you do. When you tell someone your job's a professional cyclist, they're like, oh, cool. Whereas in England, it's like, yeah, well, what's your real job? And so to me, it's a fantastic place. It does get grey. It can be quite depressing. There were 3 weeks where we didn't see sunshine. But yeah, it is cool. I mean, we rented a place this winter, and it was a holiday house, and the people whose house we rented it from had this amazing garage set up, and they had like pressure washers and all kinds of stuff there, and they were like, oh, you're a cyclocross rider, yeah, you should use it all, it's no problem. And then they started watching the races because they'd never really been into cross, and by the end of it they used to put little notes under my door when I won a race to say well done. And so like culturally it's one of the best places in the world to do that, and they do have good chocolate, so yeah, I mean, yeah, I've just got to buy a lot of vitamin D tablets, and yeah, no, I live in the south of France the rest of the year, and and yeah, it's warm and sunny and amazing training, and I lived in Belgium for 10 years, so I've done more than most people that aren't Belgian, and I think I've probably an award or something for it, but I do love being there, but then now I can't really hack more than a month at a time. Over the Eastern League as well, aren't they? Really? Okay. Yeah, that's not.
This might be why we're struggling to get some of the women.
Yeah, and elite women. So first thing was, sorry, I've got memory issues. The first question. Oh yeah. So yeah, this year World Cups were supposed to be all non-geo restricted. And they were. And so, again, that's something that we pushed for in the Cross Commission, but there's something related. So the UCI are a wonderful organisation. And unfortunately, the way it's run doesn't always work in the favour of the more minor sports like cyclocross. So they sell a television package, and that includes every World Cup and every World Championships. And if that, the country television production that bought that, if they don't want to show it, they have the right to not show it. And no other television company can buy it. So they sell everything based on the road, and then you get all this free stuff that they don't want to show. And so we were trying to work out a way that it could be non-geo-restricted on the UCI YouTube channel, only geo-restricted in Belgium, basically, because Belgium pays massively for telling it play, and then the rest of the world can watch it. And they were going to do that this year, but I don't think it happened. I think you had to watch illegal streams for World Cups.
It's on Eurosport. I watched it live on Eurosport.
The World Cups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah. But the World Championships, they did not show live. They only and. Not the women's. On Saturday at 3 o'clock.
I was on Eurosport Play.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
$2.99.
Did you get a commission? Yeah. So, but if you don't have that, you couldn't watch it, and that's not a good thing for the growth of the sport either, and particularly.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're they're selling a package based on road racing, not based on any other sport, so yeah, it's bad. And as for Eastern League, selling out a category that only women can ride, that's really bad too. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Put that on my to-do list.
Can I play that for that? We all love cycling, obviously. But in honesty, there's been Britain that suffers from not being able to.
Yeah.
And you see that we've got some great British riders, but one in the field tackling out. I mean, how can you, and even the Belgians, it's off to do the classics this year. Van der Poel was off to do the Olympics in 2 years' time. Yeah. How can you change that? You have to break down lines. That's not representing the cycle.
Yeah, so Ian is doing his best, and he's doing a good job. But he's not being pushed to be better. And if he's being pushed to be better, that increases the level of racing in the UK. Matthew van der Poel is dominant, and he's staying in the sport for a long time. He's just increased his contract to €1.5 million a year, so he is a little bit less than me, but you know. So he's actually staying in the sport for the next 3 years while doing the Olympics at the same time. Whether that's a good thing for the sport or not, because Wout's leaving and nobody else can touch him, so I don't know, but perhaps riders like Tom Pidcock coming through, who could be an incredible elite rider, and Ben Turner, Dan Tullett, Ben Tullett, those guys coming through into 5-6 years coming into the elite category, maybe they'll actually increase the entire standard in the UK. I'm not saying it's bad, I'm just saying that it could be better. And yeah, I mean, Tom Pidcock wants to win elite world championships, and I genuinely think he can if he stays on the right path. How do we keep those riders in the sport? I guess at elite men's level, it's just money, basically. And if Matthew van der Poel's paid $1.5 million now, then in 5 years, surely Pidcock could get the same if he was a multiple world champion. So I think naturally, the more riders that are paid that money, the more they'll stay in the sport. And Matthew himself has said, why would I go to road racing when I'm not going to get paid that much? But you look, when Stibar left 5 or 6 years ago, he was only getting 300,000 as a road rider, and he was only getting 200,000 as a cross rider. So the sport's moved on significantly in that time, and I think that's the reason why you'll get riders like Matthew stay. Yes, so everything I do is basically full cross. I do phases of training, so you start with endurance, you go into strength, you go into the top end, and then you repeat again. I do some road racing, not a lot anymore, and some mountain biking, not actual racing, just mountain biking. I ride my cross bike once a week, pretty much every week from May onwards. I do a little bit of running, I do core work, I go to the gym twice a week. I pretty much do everything I can do. The first bit of training when you start back is always endurance to build a base, and then you work from there up. But everything I do is geared towards the cross season and towards being good at the beginning and at the end. I do agree with that. I think that America has a really good model. I think outside of Belgium, it's a participation-based model, and every country has to get the revenue through riders paying to enter the race. And America really has nailed it, basically. Every weekend when they have races, they have two races in the same venue. So Saturday's one way around the course, Sunday's the other way around the course. And you laugh, but it actually makes like a really different race. And I've been there. The first year I was like, oh yeah, well this is easy then. And then the second time the other way, you're like, whoa, where isn't there? it really is different. And so they have 2,000 racers racing on a day. They haven't got time issues like the rest of the world has. So they start at 8 o'clock in the morning and finish at 4, and they get 10 races in a day or something. And that actually allows them to have elite women and there's normally two other women's races on the same day. And I can't remember their categories, but in some of the East Coast races, they have 125 rider fields and they sell out in the women's in all three races. So that's definitely improved and that's encouraged because it's a family thing. And the week's long national, the nationals is a week long, basically. And that encourages all those riders from around the country to go there and do those races. And maybe they have more riders, so it works better. But I don't see a reason why you can't extend, why you shouldn't have in England a national trophy weekend. And on that weekend, you have one national trophy race. And then the day before or the day after, you have a non-UCI race. And it's the different way around the course. And then you're encouraging those riders to stay in the area, to stay for the other races, to watch the races, not just do their race at 9 o'clock and go home. And maybe by a family staying and leaving their kids there with them for the day, the kids actually get inspired by the elite racers, and maybe you keep more riders in the sport. So yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. Did you race nationals this year?
I'm not allowed.
Oh. I was trying to work out where your accent was from. Your English is very good. Okay. Did the people you race against race nationals? All right. Yeah. Would you have raced nationals?
I did.
Okay. And was it intimidating? Are we scary people?
I made myself
So having a pit crew is something that is useful. If you had the ability to access a pit crew at Nationals, that would help. Because I've had an offer from someone to do 10 riders at Nationals. And I've kind of said, well, I'm not sure how that would work, but if it's something that would genuinely encourage riders to go to Nationals. Did you race cross in Belgium?
No.
Why not?
Oh
yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, there's a lot of beer to get through. That's fair enough.
It's serious injury last year. Can you talk about what it was like to try and sort of come back from that? You know, some of the experiences, some of the battles maybe internally. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so it was pretty tough. So, for anyone that doesn't know, I crashed at the European Championships. A rider put their foot in my front wheel and I stopped at about 50k an hour, so it hurt quite a lot. I broke my collarbone, I got concussion, and did everywhere else on my body as well, I think. And I didn't race then from the 30th of October until the 16th of January. And my first race back was the World Cup in Hoogeheide, and then my second race back was the World Championships. It was tough. It was a tough time. I had Steph. Everybody needs a Steph. He's a very good mechanic, driver, all those kind of things. He's very useful. And he was also there for me when I needed emotionally to deal with it. And he's probably disagree, but I'm quite a stable person. But at the time, there was, you know, we went after about 2 weeks and to have the dressings off and stuff, and my shoulder wound, which was separate to the collarbone, had got infected. And up until that point, I was doing okay. I managed all my expectations, and then I worked in a hospital, so I just imagined my arm was going to drop off or something. And the reality of that was obviously nothing. It was absolutely fine. It healed in 2 weeks. But at the time, I did have Steph to reason it through with me. And a broken bone does heal, an upper limb fracture does heal in 6 to 8 weeks. So, you know, you have a timeline, and as long as everything's working and going right, you know it will heal. But yeah, it is tough. I'm 36, I was 35, and, you know, a lot of people retire at that age. It's not, to come back and get the season I've had is pretty impressive. That sounds like I'm really picking myself up. I'm proud of what I achieved to come back and to have the season I had this year. I think that getting second in Hoogstrand last year after 3 weeks back on the bike was the point that made me realise, yeah, you're still good enough for this. Because if I wasn't competing at that level, you're still unsure. You still don't necessarily believe in yourself. I'm quite a confidence-based rider, and most of the time I'm overly confident. But last year it was kind of, you're questioning yourself. So to get that result reassured you that, yeah, you know, you need to come back and do it. And so, yeah, it was tough, but I don't think at any point I ever wanted to end my career on that season. And that was probably the main driving force to come back that this year. And now it's because I know I can do better.
Do you games that sort of, they would sponsor, say, the Pigskin Criterion Series, Red, you know, Red Bull, and that sort of stuff. Do you reckon more can be done by government bodies to include outside sponsors in order to raise the profile of the sport?
Absolutely, I do think they can, and I do think that there is a huge opportunity to sell women's sport, to equalise World Cup prize money by selling the women's side of the sport. And in Belgium they've done that, and Glaser brought in an ice cream manufacturer as a sponsor for the women's series. And so individually they've brought extra money in just by saying we're going to support the women's series. I think that, I mean, in Belgium everyone's outside of industry. There aren't any industry sponsors. Maybe Shimano, but that's a UCI sponsor. So, and I think that in other countries there's a lot of opportunity to do that, and one of my sponsors is actually Zypex is a, now I've got to get this right, a crystalline chemical that's mixed with concrete to waterproof. Yeah, I think I've got that one right this time. And they're a huge manufacturer of this chemical that mixes with this concrete, and they sell it to, like, they use it in the Shard and places like that, so really big, something that you or I wouldn't buy to help our house, but off the back of sponsoring me, they've actually got a couple of more deals with Belgian companies. So it's, there are plenty of opportunities for that kind of thing. I think, yeah, Red Bull's a fantastic example. They've done a lot with mountain biking, and they do sponsor Pauline Prevot and Wout van Aert, but I think they're probably too X Gamesy type than for cyclocross. Cyclocross is weird in that it's not road racing, so it's not like sleek and road racingy, and it's not gnarly and mountain biking, so it doesn't really know where to sit, basically. But there are plenty of opportunities to do that. And on the problem again is the wonderful UCI. They have a specific department that look out for sponsors for the different sports, and it was taken away from the guy that used to do it on the Cross Commission, and so now we're like fourth tier to get anything, basically. So any sponsors that come in, oh yeah, we'll take you to the road racing, and then they never get to us. So yeah, I think there's plenty of opportunity, but if you know anyone, let me know. Yeah, you know, 1 year at National at Worlds, Steph said to a magazine that these tyres, they had a blue sidewall, and it was just a fun thing. And they said to this magazine, yeah, it's waterproof, mud repellent, waterproof. And they wrote me in their magazine. Oops. So we'll just take a few last questions. Anyone? Anyone? My motivation to do it is that I like talking about myself. So it's really easy. No, I want the sport to be accessible, and I want people to know what it's like. And I think you can look at a million race reports, and you can look at a million results, but it doesn't tell you anything about the riders or the story or the what you were feeling and things like that. And so my race videos this year have been all about telling a bit of a story about the race, a bit of how I feel, a bit of how I interpret what I've done. And I think people appreciate that because it's a little bit different, and because I come across just as a normal, well, I hope I come across as a normal person, but I have the same feelings that anyone here might have in a bike race. And so I think people should see that there's nothing different that goes on in my head than anyone else. So, and once again, I've got a brain issue. What was the second question?
Which other riders do you think are doing a good job with their social?
I think Sanne van Passen used to do an amazing job. She's retired. I think a lot of the Belgian and Dutch riders don't haven't learned to use English speaking social media yet to the same way that the Americans do. I think Jeremy Powers is very good at his profile. Ellen Noble does a good job on what she's doing. She has a really good social media presence, and it's not all about results, which is good. I think the better you are in the sport, the less you do, which is actually really weird, because the better you are, the more people want to know about what you do. So yeah, maybe they're too busy training and I'm not, or something. We had a question down here.
Oh, there's two.
Oh,
oh.
Oh.
Yes. Do you think that we could learn something from the Americans, you know, given the results that we had in the women's race this year, the World Cyclocross Championships?
Learn from the American women?
Yes.
Yeah, they did, yeah. I think that, I think their racing is actually really, really good. So I've raced in America for the last 7 years, and the standard, the strength and depth has significantly improved. Katie Compton's always won stuff, it's what she does. Caitlin Keogh's getting to the age where she's super strong, and her skills match her strength now. So she's had like 4 World Cup podiums this year. And I think that because the strength and depth is much higher even than Europe in the 5 to 10th place, they actually get a lot of really good riders who can perform really well on their day. So, I think Elle Anderson was also in the top 10. Who was the fourth one? Oh, I think there was only 3. But yeah, they did really good. And maybe it's by growing the under 23 that it increases the competition into the elites, which when you have... You look at riders like Tom Pidcock, but he came super strong when he was racing against Dan Tullett and Ben Turner. So there's 3 of them that every week they're making each other go faster and harder, and that improves their skills. So the same with the women. If you get 2 or 3 women that can compete against each other week in, week out, they improve the level in that country. So, yeah, we could definitely learn from the Americans. There's a guy over there. Yeah.
Apologies, we've arrived a little bit late, so you may have covered this already. If you have, Andrew, I have a spare question for you. How has working with Andrew helped your career? Has it given you longevity? Is it speed?
Yeah. It's made me really skinny. No, it's really been interesting, actually. It's been, you missed this bit. So, like I said earlier, this year's the first year in about 5 years that I haven't been sick in the entire season, and I think that relates to nutrition and supplements. I have learned how to use caffeine properly for the first time, and I think that does help towards the end of a race, which is really good. I think it's fantastic. We've only worked together a year, and I think I'm not going to give him credit for longevity after 12 months, but I don't see why it can't help, extend my career for sure.
John, you missed the start bit, but I think Helen's diet was pretty much there or thereabouts when I first started working with her. So in some ways it made my job harder, because a lot of people I work with, it's like, it's quite obvious what they need to work on, and quite often that's the food first and the real food approach first, before you then start working on the finer details and the, you know, the really fine margins with, you know, additional supplements, whether it's caffeine or beetroot juice or, performance cherry for racing only. So it was pretty difficult to, I would say, make too many improvements. It's just fine-tuning, really.
Apparently I had the best iron he's seen in an athlete in my diet, FYI.
Pretty much every female endurance athlete I've ever worked with are iron deficient, not just for what they're doing, but just in terms of the normal population, and the iron requirements for endurance athletes are far higher than, you know, a normal, I suppose, non-athletic person. And Helen's was well above even the range for an endurance athlete, and that's pretty much unheard of.
Welcome. John, you had a question.
This is dedicated to all the race organisers here. Obviously, a couple here and there. Just a few facts, actually. 10 years ago, we had total number of rides per season was about 10 to 12,000. We are now, this year, for the last the season's just finished, we are just short of 70,000 individual bike rides during that season. Now, we did discuss yesterday whether we could cheat and go up to 71,000, but we decided we couldn't. The issue for Chris, for Hugh, is how many toilets? How big is the car? Now, these are really big fundamental issues. Every time anyone presents a race to any committee, any organiser, they're going to ask those simple questions. And for race organisers, and I understand why Eastern Region did what they did, and I know how Central worked. It's capacity. How many people can you deal with on the day? So, here, how many toilets have you got?
This is actually quite true. What happens when you're awarded, first of all, from our perspective, it was a London League, there's a pathway, London League, regional championships, national trophy, all the way up to next year's national championship. I'd like to think it's because we've got a fantastic course at Cycle Park. It's because we've got a nice car park. It's because we've got the sufficient number of toilets, and it's because we're very, very close to the M25. So around that, yes, we've got to build the best possible course we have, but John is absolutely right. It's all about, when you get to that level, it's all about the facilities. And being a venue which is cycle-specific and permanently in place at Cycle Park, that allows us to do an awful lot, obviously, which many other venues can do. So I think the next step from that is obviously next year's event. How do we maximise what we've got? And the challenge for me and Carl over there from the ground staff team who helped me build the course last year, we're going to need a much bigger team this year, Carl, is how we actually utilise what we've got in place around all of those nice facilities. And even the facilities we have at Cycle Park are nowhere near sufficient for a national championship. So, for example, we've not got enough car parking space. We've not got enough motorhome space. We're going to need to put off-site car parking in place and sort of a shuttle service between the major stations, Gravesend, Ebbsfleet, rotating, so it's bringing people in from the car parks, for example. We're going to have to organise a much better crowd control system, because based on the numbers of people who turned up at Hetton, which is not the easiest place in the world to get to, compared to Cycle Park, we're going to be overrun by crowds. It's a three-day event, not a one-day event. So all of these infrastructure problems become the main issues. And it's almost like the course itself is a secondary issue. I think Hetton did a really, really good job of how they managed all the crowds. I didn't think the course was as technical as it might be. I don't know if Ellen would agree with that.
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, it was a great course, don't get me wrong. Really good. It was a classic case where they utilised what they had to the best possible way they could. So there was an awful lot of long, weeping corners, kind of muddy corners, which presented a very... presented a challenge in court in its own way, but not necessarily as technical. So with Cycle Park, we've got an entirely different course in place, which is much tighter. And if all the people who raced the people who raced the national trophy there this year will attest, it's all about sort of off camber banks, steep run ups, a lot more of the kind of traditional cyclocross skills. Yeah, so compared to what they had at Hetton, which was using a very, very large area, Cycle Park's much more condensed. So we have the specific challenges of the geography there, which means there's an awful lot of technical kind of bank run ups and stuff. There's never a great deal of distance between any one technical element and the next, so we kind of compared it to a Fisher Price activity centre. Those people are old enough to remember those. So there's always a very upcoming, fast, new challenge approaching, which Helen will see when she's racing the next year. Lots of more running than Sunderland, which I know is good for you. So yeah, it's all about combining really the natural landscape you have, using it as best you can around what the infrastructure needs to be for the Federation and the UCI regulations, and it's kind of making the most of everything come together, which I'm really looking forward to.
I think that's actually one of the biggest differences between Belgium and the rest of the world, is that Belgium finds a cyclocross venue like the Koppenberg and they make it work. Whereas around the rest of the world, because it's participation driven, the organisers like you have to look into things like toilets and car parks. In Belgium, you piss against a tree and it's absolutely fine. And the parking can be Geeten, the parking is probably 2.5 kilometres from the race for the riders. And it's fine for the riders, you're on a bike, but my pit staff have to walk 5 kilometres in a day just to get to the pit, and they don't care, nobody cares. And so I think that highlights very much how the structure is very different, even though it's the same sport, it's very different in Belgium compared to the rest of the world.
And I think, again, because we're a dedicated cycle facility, a cycle park, we've got a huge advantage there, because most of that course will be in place. As a legacy of the national trophy we did this year, we've budgeted for permanently in place cyclocross features, which when the national championships happen, is just simply a case of hooking them all up to make the new course. Whereas some of the other regional organisers, they literally go into a field, which is nothing there, and put everything in place. So this year's national trophy for the first time in Crawley Wheelers done at Ardingly, they literally will have to go in a couple of days before and do the whole thing with a massive team of people. So it's a big challenge to just turn a field into a national trophy cyclocross event. There is going to be a flyover. We've got a guy coming in next week who's going to build it for us. I've done a couple of course layouts where it'll be included. One of which is going to be favourable. It's going to be near the start, which will be at the Cyclopark Cafe end this year. Yeah, it's going to be moved up to the start straight for those of you who've done it. We've got a couple of options of bridges and flyovers. It's a bit featureless at that end of the course at the moment, so if we put the flyover up there, it kind of gives people something to look at. We're not going to have a crocodile.
Can you add a ride-through beer tent? Can you add a ride-through beer tent?
We have actually got a license to sell beer at Cycle Park. The problem is, pretty much the only way you can get there is to drive. So it's not really
a license to give it away for free.
We're actually looking at putting a, I don't know if you've seen these portable pubs, they're called. So they're like mini pubs. We've actually got two of those booked at the moment.
Yeah, I do think that. I think that Jeremy Powers did a fantastic job in marketing himself. I think that there are other riders that are trying. You need to have a bigger base to start with, and there are plenty of companies that will buy you followers. And I know a few riders that have done that to get their fan base up to start with. And yeah, there is a place for that, because then you can show that you have a return. I have around last month 1 million impressions, Steph. 1.2 million impressions across social media in January, and I have a lot of engagements in my social media, but I don't have like 50, 60,000 people follow me in any account. But yeah, I think people can do a lot more. I think there could be some really fascinating stories, and I think that the cyclocross riders' lives are very different to road riders, and so I think they could actually be really interesting mini series on different riders. But it's actually finding someone that wants to do it and finding the athlete to do it. They do, at the end of the season, the Super Prestige have they call it the slot show. It's an end of season show, and it's just a 1 hour TV program, and they do fun things in it. So one year they did a motocross rider and a cross rider, and they had to ride the opposite thing to what they race. And it was pretty fun. And then they raced each other and the team won. And then this year they did Winter Olympics, and they went to an indoor snow place, and they did stuff on blow up rubber things. They just went down the hill as fast as they could and stuff like that. And it's actually quite interesting. It's gimmicky, but it is interesting. They did a thing with Wamp and Art where he dressed up as an old man and went to a kids clinic. And then at the end, he was like, yeah, I'm a pro rider. And you know, there's a lot of fun things they do in Belgium, but the TV companies engage to do that. The riders don't do offering backs, but yeah, they definitely could.
So I just want to bring it back to Helen 100, because you said that it's been extended, the fundraising, for another week. So how can people get involved if they haven't already?
So you can go onto the Just Giving page, which links are on my Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. CX Helen on Instagram and Twitter. And any other ideas you have for it, just send me an email or message on any of that. And I will get back to you on it. And we are looking for ideas as how to make it as successful as possible. It's not just about giving money to under 23 riders to ride a race. Although our junior here would love some money. But so any ideas you have is great. It's also a raffle. So anyone that donates any money goes into the raffle, and the raffle will be drawn on the 4th of March.
So just wanted to say thank you so much for coming out and speaking to us tonight, and thank you to everybody for your questions. I believe you're going to be sticking around a little bit longer. So thank you again for everyone for coming out tonight.
I'd like to say a big, big thank you to everybody that joined us on the evening, to any of you that tuned in on Facebook Live, and again, massive thank you to Helen, Hugh, Andrew, and Laura so much for hosting. And if you like what we do, I'm usually joined by my stoker, Jenny. She's busy working away in the London Bike Kitchen. So if you like what we do, look Mum No Hands and the London Bike Kitchen as Wheel Suckers Podcast. Please remember to like, rate, and subscribe. Do you know somebody who likes cyclocross? Do you know somebody that likes podcasts? Then why don't you recommend our podcast? And thanks again, everybody, for your support. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.